Blog Talk Radio.
We demand transparency
and accountability,
and accountability
in every judge from sea to sea,
in every judge from sea to sea.
We just want integrity,
we just want integrity.
Judicial hides a lot from you,
judicial hides a lot from you.
There's not much in public view,
there's not much in public view.
From this darkness they won't budge,
from this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge,
that's why you don't know your judge.
From this darkness they won't budge,
from this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge,
that's why you don't know your judge.
Wow, good evening everyone. Welcome to another Blog Talk Radio show on Hidden Truth Revealed channel, The Inside Scoop. I have to tell you, I love that skit that we do, don't you? Anyway, I'm Luann Fleming. Marcy Friedman's going to be on pretty quickly, and Robin Austin is here with us tonight, and our guest tonight is Brian Kinter. Now, Brian is with the Judicial Accountability Movement. It's called JAM, and I've asked him this earlier this week, are we going to end this war of judicial corruption? So Brian's going to be discussing the judge who was removed, or he said he was resigned, from family cases in Nevada, state of corruption, the Judge Hemke case. So we're going to be talking to Brian about this and about what's his take on, you know, the judicial corruption going on. Is it going to ever end? Are we getting, are we doing some good doing these radio shows? Are we doing good nationally? You know, as many advocates are working in the Family Protection Services Department, CPS, people that are helping out people that are victimized in CPS, victimized in APS, victimized in probate court, family court, you name it. This is going on nationally. So anyway, Robin, say hi.
Hi.
And I'm not sure, I don't think Marcy is on yet, but we have our guest. But the one thing we want to talk about first is that here in Colorado, we have like three bills that are going in, and I just have it on my page here. But anyway, there's one with the Office of Public Guardianship. That was postponed, and there was another bill going in for the protection of people being guardianized under guardianship. So that one was postponed. And then we have another one where they want to actually join APS and CPS together. They can actually work together now instead of separate entities. So now we're trying to squash that bill. But it's like it's always in their best interest, and this is just not right. It's not right. So anyway, I just want to let you know that those have been postponed, those two other bills. We have another bill on Friday going in, so we're working. She's a visitor lobbyist that is helping us get some of these bills put into Colorado, which is awesome, this one lady that we've connected with. Anyway, we'll be having her on our show hopefully in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But in the meanwhile, we want to welcome our guest, Brian Kinter. Hold on, Brian, are you with us?
I am.
Hey, how's it going?
Yes, ma'am.
How's it going?
It's going well. A little nippy out here in Ohio.
Oh, yeah. What is it, 15 below, you said?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh. So give us a little rundown, Brian, of the Judicial Accountability Movement, what you do, and just get everybody, you're on Facebook too, so let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, and let's talk about the Judicial Accountability Movement right now and what your intentions are with that.
Okay, well, on the Judicial Accountability Movement, we started this process back in 2007 when I went through my own brutal child custody case, and, you know, my rights was terminated. I fought, got them back. Took a case all the way up before the U.S. Supreme Court, and then had the U.S. Supreme Court, when we had filed our writ of cert, we had requested or stated that oral arguments was not necessary. However, if the court deemed that they were appropriate, that we weren't opposed or had any objections to attending for oral arguments. The United States Supreme Court came back and had scheduled oral arguments for clarification purposes for July 15th, 2013. And we were all excited, getting prepared, ready to go to D.C., when on July 13th, 2013, the United States Supreme Court initiated Rule 28.8, which says no pro se litigant can take their case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, when we began to dig in, we found out that the United States Supreme Court hadn't heard a pro se litigant's case since 1984. And my argument was is that I don't believe that the Supreme Court has the power or the authority to initiate a rule that supervents or proceeds above and beyond what the law requires. The law requires that I have to have a remedy of redress for my grievances when I have a corrupt judge that I face in a trial court judge. And how we got to the Supreme Court case, and a lot of people said, well, you can't take a child custody case. This was never about a child custody case. This was about the deprivation of rights during a child custody case, whereas the judge aided and abetted systematically the continuation of parental alienation and the constant desecration, degradation, and demoralization of my God-given constitutionally protected rights. So I filed a tort claim action against the judge, several judges, and against the magistrate and the guardian ad litem, the children's attorney, and the state of Ohio. So we were able to get through all the maze only to discover that every time that you go up the food chain, it's a little bit more corrupt each and every single time. Last year, I was in Washington, D.C. on July 29th with Senator Grassley there. They did a expose on there for judicial corruption, and they were talking about accountability and whistleblowers. Well, Senator Grassley was making comments that, you know, truth will set you free. Well, here's the truth that will set you all free. And the truth is that we go to the court, we believe that there's supposed to be a resemblance of justice there, but once as you embark upon the journey, you discover that the first order of business for the court is to generate business for the court. So what they do is they just postpone, prolong, delay, deter, and it's a constant nonsense. So we continually march forward, and right now we're working with Zena Crenshaw on the opt-in USA and going through, because we just had a decision that came back from the United Nations Human Rights Council saying that they concur and agree that there is no remedy of redress for grievances here in the United States of America. Now, a lot of people sit and say that, hey, you don't want to be going to the United Nations because, you know, they in their own rights, they have their own struggles, their own frustrations, and, you know, their own viewpoints and how they're going to proceed. It was never about that. It was about our own country. Our Senate signed in 2009 the ICCPR, which stipulated that in the United States that every constituent has a proper remedy of redress for their grievances. All they have to do is exercise it. Well, after spending 12 years doing this stuff and gathering over 3,000 cases where you can clearly see the illumination that it doesn't matter. You can go up as high as you want to, but the next higher court will virtually always refer back to the lower courts, and they will simply rubber stamp those decisions. So it's been an ongoing battle for us. But as you talk about judicial accountability, I do believe that the pressure from programs like yours and Robbins and, you know, Marty Oakley's and a number of other ones that are out there, that it's applying the pressure that they are becoming more consciously aware. So they want to continue this manifestation that there is the possibility of justice. But my argument is that we want to see the substantive evidence of the justice. I don't want to hear about it because, you know, and don't take this wrong, Lulu, because I rejoice and I jump up and down when I hear victories for other people. But I'm saying, why should other people also be able to obtain that justice and yet some people can't? Well, here's the truth of the matter. A lot of it revolves around economics. The court system by design wants to beat you into submission to adapt to their ideology that they are absolutely correct no matter how egregious or how erroneous their decisions are.
Whoa, that's a lot. That's a lot. You know,
and it's true.
And it's true. Exactly. So I want to, you know, ask you that you were at the Whistleblower Summit last year. How did that go?
I've been there a few years, yes, ma'am.
A couple years, right?
Well, the Whistleblower Summit, yeah. I went last year. I went the year before. You know, last year we had the greatest, according to Marcel Reed, it was the greatest turnout we've ever had since its inception. You know, so we're very proud of that fact. You know, but here's the argument is that, you know, we're saying, where does the buck stop? You know, where are we taking, if you look at what Jody Mueller has done, what Rosa Dratz, Diane Lyons, those three women had went in and had a sit-down with Senator Grassley, and they were saying that if you take and you tie in the money, and that's one thing that Louis DeVault has done here in the state of Ohio, is that he continually follows the money. And when you look at it, it's a multi-billion dollar racket, and they simply take and they throw it all in under Title IV, and then Senator Grassley wants to say, well, Title IV has some benefits because of the Farm Bill. And then, you know, of course, nobody wants to come out and say, well, we don't want to feed our children breakfasts, you know, at school. We don't want to give them free breakfast. We don't want to give them after-school snacks and all this other nonsense. And I'm saying, wait a minute. We have never once ever, you know, looked to the government to solve our own problems. I think these problems should be solved locally or within house, within their own regions and their own areas. I don't think it's the government's responsibility to continually hand out money for giving children free breakfasts while at the same time kidnapping those children, you know, from the parents and then forcing the children's in the parents into poverty, you know, by incarceration. And then, you know, when you go into a court battle, you don't make it to the court dates. Well, then the next thing is that you're going to be held in contempt. Or if you do make it to the court date, they're going to postpone it, prolong it, delay it, continually make sure that they can remove any possibility that you have financially to be able to combat against their destruction. So, you know, and then it's a prison to pipeline because you have right now, I think the last estimate that I read was 38 million children that are with an absentee parent. And then you have 38 million children that are growing up a little bit confused or, you know, you move one parent out of the home and then those children, they have a higher, greater possibility of becoming involved with gangs, truancy, so on and so forth. All these social ills, and then James Kelly and Ira Scott with the ACE studies are bringing in that report to be able to follow up and saying, this isn't something that was just thrown together overnight or somebody speculating. We've got documented evidential proof that all of the system for what was designed back when they initiated this nonsense for, you know, the families first, that it has been a 50-year conundrum. It's been nothing but a nightmare, and it's done more damage. It's the worst experiment on American people, you know, that there ever has been.
Wow, and you talk a lot about Opt-in USA with Zena Crenshaw, and I know
yes,
that
ma'am.
I'm gonna be trying to get them onto our radio show pretty soon, but. So how does that work?
Zena,
I mean, go ahead.
How that works is that right now what Zena's doing is she's saying, listen, we don't want the United Nations coming into our nation telling us what to do or anything either. What we're saying is that when you look at 3,000 cases and you're sitting there and you're saying these people have went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court and for one reason or another, they're just dismissed, denied, delayed, deterred. They never obtained the justice. And, you know, then you look at the fact that the United States Supreme Court, just like any other court, they have the total power. They deal with thugs on a regular basis. So if they want to take and seal a record, seal a case, you know, they have the power to do so. You know, I'm not sure if anybody has read or looked at the Reidhauer case, you know, where that was. But I'm going to pull that up here and I can give you some insights on that. It started off as a $50 million suit and it wound up costing the U.S. government $20 billion, you know, but it was a long, drawn-out process. And I'm telling everybody, listen, we have to apply pressure anywhere and everywhere that we possibly can because they have to be held accountable. They're, you know, it's amazing to me that we can walk into a court of law where they expect requiring demand, you to stand up and give an account I want to know right now, Robin, where you were on February 3rd, 1986. And Robin's supposed to be able to, you know, on a whim, just spit out the information. And then even though he has documented evidence of where he was on that date, the court can come back and say, well, I simply don't believe him. Okay? So they just dismiss it. They bury it. And they hide it. And I'm saying, no, we need to have transparency. We should all be expected, required to step to the same yardstick. Otherwise, you've got two classes of people here in the United States of America. You've got one that is can escape any type of liability, and you've got a second one that's totally, you know, has to be prosecuted simply because the judge makes a determination to do so. You know, it's outlandish. Our system, it needs checks and balances. And we need to have an independent oversight committee made up of private individuals that have a direct link to the United States Attorney General's office to be able to prosecute these judges when they violate your rights. I just firmly believe in it.
Yeah, you know, the word that came to my mind when you were going over that, it just sounds like our courts are a giant drunken psychopath, because not only do they treat people without compassion, without regard, without considering the effects of what they're doing on the lives that they're affecting, but they do it in such a way that it is as though there is no rationality behind it. There is no reason behind it. It's not merely psychopathic. It's also kind of this drunken stumbling into cruelty without the rationality that you'll often see in the case of a real human psychopath.
Right. Yeah.
I think our judges, Robin, have a, you know, when you take and you look, and that's why it's so imperative that people understand, you know, the Humpty case there, where you had a judge out there in Nevada that was just removed off of the bench, okay, and some people say that he resigned. Well, he entered into a contract or an agreement with them to resign, and it's going to be interesting to find out whether or not he got his pension and whether he can stay, you know, keep income coming in and things. But one of the things that they had said, and it's going to be case number 2018-1868, and this was out of Reno, Nevada, and they said that Judge Humke's actions constituted a substantial threat of serious harm to the administration of justice. Well, now wait a minute, because, and we'll go on and we'll illuminate more to that story, but it shows then that the court is somehow trying to give the appearance that, you know, we're self-correcting, we have the ability to be able to do this. While it may be correct in theory, the practical application of it is you can take Judge Humpty out, but putting another one in that's just as corrupt or worse, okay, doesn't solve the problem. You cannot, they do not have the capacity or the propensity to be able to be self-executing. They don't care. You know, because very few people have the means or wherewithal to be able to combat the consistent abuse that they deliver. You know, they just come back on every little thing. You become a target, then it's a retaliation, and it becomes quite brutal.
Yeah, and we always warn everybody, you know, if you think you're going through a divorce, you think you're going to, you know, drop a will or your trust, or you know, if you have a domestic violence or whatever the problem is, do not settle it in a courtroom. It's not going to happen the way you think it's going to happen. You know, and I tell everybody,
absolutely,
if you
correct.
Could get a divorce, if you could get a divorce and don't go through all that, or even be friends or do whatever you got to do, just don't go to a courtroom, because they're not our courts of hall of justice anymore. They're not.
Well, if it's at all possible to avoid court, you absolutely, absolutely should take every precaution. But just like yourself, you know, you look at your own case there, and here are your parents. They've taken their precautions to set up the trust, do everything right. We're following the letter of the law. And then you find out, wait a minute, you know, somebody's violating this, and then we're going to come in as the court, and we're going to pilfer and plunder your entire estate because hey, I need to make sure that somebody else in the brotherhood make sure that they get a, you know, some money so that they can pay their bills and stuff. And my argument is that I really don't give a rat's ass about your people's bills, okay? I concern myself with justice. I concern myself with truth. And you people predicated upon an illusion or upon a lie, because in every single case that I have viewed, everything always stems around one lie. Somebody lies, and once that lie is put into the record, that lie takes on a life of its own, and it just runs rampant, because we're all so concerned about, well, you know, we don't want to offend anybody, or we don't want to do this, the court doesn't want to make a mistake, and things. It's all horseshit. The court knows intentionally, willfully, deliberately what they're doing, and this is just my opinion. I believe that we have 3,000 cases that are well documented, and when you stop and you look at 88 of the world's best scholars that sit on the United Nations Human Rights Council concurring that there is no remedy of redress for grievances, we have a serious problem here in the United States of America.
Right. Yeah,
we do.
We do. We have a huge problem here in America.
We do. I
the
often
problem
liken
is that where are you going to go to get it corrected? Where will you go to get it corrected? You know, I have people
exactly.
saying to me is that, listen, Brian, this is foolish. You ought to be putting more of your time in the Ohio gate, you know, because we've got our own groups here in Ohio and things like that. And I sit on a lot of those boards and stuff, and I keep telling people, listen, it's not just confined or restricted to the geographical limitations of the state of Ohio. And everybody thinks that it's the state courts. Well, it's the federal courts that continually feeds it. Our state courts are corrupt because our federal courts are corrupt.
Right. So we're actually going to talk to you about the case that has happened in Nevada, and that's the Humke case. So
yes, ma'am.
So basically what's going on with that case is that this judge down there, he was not doing the right by the people in family court, right?
Well, it was more than just family court. Okay, it was also in probate court. It was in criminal matters as well, you know, and I'm going to read you some of the things here on such as on page 3, they said that Judge Humke, he didn't have the knowledge and skills needed to perform his judicial duties. Okay, now to some people, they think, well, that sounds just pretty, you know, cliche, and, you know, well, those are pious sentiments and things like that. But what I do is I take that and I say, wait a minute, your own Supreme Court acknowledges that you have people sitting on the bench that have neither the knowledge or the skills needed to perform their judicial duties. So then the question beckons is that what is the standard for becoming a judge? Is it just how many dollars that I can collect from the people that want to either elect me or support me? Or is it how many dollars that I can pay out to those above me so that I can gain favor with them, so that I can be appointed a position of power, so that I can exercise my spleen on whoever the hell I want to exercise my spleen on.
Right.
Jeez. Right. And is there any kind of a measurable standard that a person actually needs to have, needs some way to judge what is a judge? You know, who do we permit to exercise authority over others, their peers, the populace around us, ourselves? Who do we permit to do that? And is there some standard that they have to meet to be able to do that, to be allowed to do that, to be permitted to do that?
Plus you have the Judicial Oversight Board and the Ethics Committee to be able to look and see whether or not they have violated people's rights. But the problem is that they're all in bed together. You know, you've got a huge cesspool there of the same people guarding the hen house, and you're saying, wait a minute, you know, there's something wrong. And I'm going to tell you is that the one thing that really pissed me the most was that, you know, my rights had been completely terminated to my children. There was never a finding of unfitness, abuse, or neglect. They never had anything. It was predicated on a whim of a woman that had a vendetta against her ex-husband, and that was Katrina Lancaster, who was the magistrate that sat on our case. So every other male that walked into her courtroom, their rights to their children was greatly diminished. And my argument was is that how can a state, any state in this United States, take and diminish one parent's access while enlarging the other parent's access, absent of finding out on fitness, abuse, or neglect by a clear and convincing standard, and not be volatile to the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution? It took both mom and dad to you know, create that child. How can the state come in and say, well, you know what, Robin, I know that that's your son, but yeah, now you're only going to get to see him 4 days a week, or 4 days a month, I'm sorry, 4 days a month, and you get to pay for the privilege of being able to see your own child. So, you know, I just found that a little bit bizarre. It went against the grain for me, because I was saying, I don't need you, I don't need anybody else to tell me what I need to do to provide for my children, when to provide, as to provide, how to provide. And I'll be damned if you're going to dictate that I have to buy my children Reebok tennis shoes if I can only afford $3 Walmart rejects. They're my children. They'll never go shoeless. But now you get into a court of law, and the court comes out and says, well, now not only are you going to pay child support, but you're going to pay for extracurricular activities. Maybe the child needs to go to horseback riding lessons because the children's attorney feels that it might be therapeutical, you know, or maybe – you know, we're going to take and have your child go to a summer camp or something, and you have to pay for this. Well, if you were an intact family, the court would never dream. Well, now they would, but previously they'd never dreamed about coming into an intact family and dictating that, oh, you're going to have to make sure that that child goes to summer camp. It's just absolute, absolute ignorance.
Wow. I absolutely agree. I mean, it's you know, these are your children. These are our parents that we talk about every day.
And the key in that sentence is, these are your children. These are our parents. This is not state property. People are people. They are not objects. It's not like a car that you buy or sell, or a home that you live in and then sell to someone else and it becomes their home. This is God-given progeny. This is even in a case of adoption, it is putting someone in that place that is a, you know, that is a choice that you make to adopt that person. That creates a situation where these two individuals are joined in a way that no one should have any business there, except if there truly is some serious harm that you know that which is the exception, but does happen. But still, that if I have children, it is up to me. It is my responsibility as a father. It is my wife's responsibility as a mother, or the mother's responsibility, the father's responsibility, to look after, nurture, take care of, raise, teach, and make sure that that child is all right through their childhood, and that they get, you know, that they make it as well as you're able to provide for them to adulthood. And it's no one's business. It is your own business. It is my own business. This is our family members we're talking about. It is not state property. These people do not belong to these courts, and the courts should keep their big noses out of it. But if there's money to be made, that's not what's happening, is it?
No.
Right, and that's the thing, though. It's never about the children, Robin. You know, it's always about. The first thing is that when you go through a child custody case, a divorce, separation, whatever it is, you go into the attorneys. What's the first thing they want to know is how much money you have. So then we get on the phone, we call the opposing counsel, and we say, well, listen, you know, they've got $10,000, or they've got $100,000, or they've got $10 million. And let's figure out how we can extract that from them through some protracted litigation. And we'll just keep the fires burning here until it all goes out. Well, see, that's what ended up costing the state of Ohio here, because we turned everything back around on them, you know. And they're really pissed. And, I mean, I won full custody. There's no doubt about that. But the question is that why did I win full custody? And the court took and gave me back my children in 2014. Well, then I turned around and went right back after the state again, because I'm saying, wait a minute. In 2007, the court's very first order said that though Mr. Kinder had been investigated by several different child protection agencies in several different counties spanning two different states, and they failed to find evidence that he abused us, doesn't remove the possibility that he could have. Well, my argument was is that, well, then there's still an equal possibility today simply based off of my anatomy. So why is it that the state would give me back my children? The state gave me back my children in a concerted effort to appease me, because when you get your children back after 7 year duration of absence, you never get back your children. You get back children that have your name, but they're not the same children. They've been brainwashed. They've been damaged. They've been traumatized by all of the nonsense and the ignorance. And that's why I keep saying, listen, the only way to make people whole, in my opinion, is by you sue these sons of biscuits. You go after the judges and you sue them, because that money, it frees up your time so that you do not have to be boggled down by the day-to-day activity of trying to survive, just pay the electric bill, gas bill, water bills, all the other nonsense of life, and yet be able to get your child into some healthy counseling and to get them over that damage that had been done. When it's like taking a child at a very young age, and I tell people all the time, if I tell my children that a table is a chair and a chair is a table, and I constantly do that from the time that they're an infant, and I just constantly reiterate that, I'll be damned in 7 years if you walk into my house if that child's going to say a chair is a chair simply because you want them to say that a chair is a chair. It's not going to happen. It's been indoctrinated. It's ingrained into them that they believe what they've been told. And I'm saying the greatest damage that we've done to our children is allowed them to live under lies. And we too, you, myself, Lulu, everybody on this call has done that. We have bought into the lie. We all believe that when you go to court, you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, you can't help but prevail. But once you embark upon the journey, you discover truth ain't got a damn thing to do with it. That's all about, you know, whatever the court wants and whatever the court deems, and we're all supposed to march to the same beat of the same drum and say, yep, because that's the court, and the court knows best. Well, I don't believe that. I don't think anybody else on this call believes that, or anybody that's listening. I think that everybody's saying, just as you had clearly illuminated, that these are God-given. There are children, there are parents, and who the hell do you think you are coming in and going to dictate that, oh, well, we're going to take your mom because, you know, we believe that she's been living by herself and, you know, she had some type of an incident or she fell and she went into the hospital, so nobody was there to look after her. And we'll come in and we'll plunder the estate while we take and stick a tube down one end of her mouth or in one part of her body, and we'll put a diaper on the other end, and we'll just euthanize her. And while we're in the process, hey, the court continually takes every damn dime that you got. This isn't right. It has to change.
You're absolutely, I agree. You are right, and it isn't right. That's so true.
So talking about change, Brian, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, I know there's a lot of advocates working on this. I mean, we have them in probate courts. We have them all over, you know, through the family courts. There's so many families that we get complaints from. What's the best way to approach this? I mean, who do we turn to?
Well, I
and a lot of people ask me, what can I do to help? What can people do to help?
Well, I think one of the big things is that they can get on Opt-in USA and see what was being done and where we're at and what we're doing, because it's self-evident. It's no different than it was, you know, in the days of Martin Luther King. Change is inevitable. You know, change will happen. The question beckons is that what will that change look like? You know, we all have this utopia and thinking that, you know, President Trump's going to come riding in or some other white knight and they're going to rescue the day. And I'm saying, no, wherever there's a possibility of corruption, corruption can possibly exist. So I'm saying we have to be open. This nonsense of, you know, giving the court the power to seal records, you know, I just find that a little bit redundant. I mean, you know, it would help keep everybody in check, because if you ain't got nothing to hide, you probably wouldn't worry one iota then about what the hell they come out with. But what transpires now is that the court manufactures shit. That's the problem. They want to paint you with a brush. They take and they illuminate it and say, well, this is how it is, and everybody runs with it.
Right. Wow. Well, we get a lot of complaints, you know, and a lot of people say, hey, what can I do to help? And it's like, well, do radio shows, talk to your legislators. What more can we do? I mean, you know, when you have a completely failed government, And I know there's some success stories out there. I've heard them. But like this judge, how was this judge recognized as doing this to all these families? Was it because a lot of families complained, or how did that happen?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think more than that is that I think it was a political agenda is what I think. But what I think is that, you know, we have a complete system failure. I mean, I've got some folks that's here right now, and, you know, we tried the legislative side by going to our congressmen, senators, and stuff, because here they have seven children that was picked up by the court, and they come down, didn't have the warrants in place, didn't have any reason. There was one child and their full diagnosis without any, you know, training or expertise to make that diagnosis, believing that the child was bulimic, and then they were saying that, well, they were concerned about the child. Well, then they didn't come for just one. They came for all seven. And so their argument was, is what value does it do me to go into the court when I normally know that the court's going to continually violate my rights? They want to subject me to a psychological, and that's one of the things that they had done is you go in and, you know, well, Robin or Lulu, you know, there's some concerns here, and we're trying to find out what's really going on here. So if it's all right with you, we'd like you to go see a psychologist and a psychiatrist and a therapist. And, you know, we're going to get you all this help and stuff like that. And you're sitting there saying, wait a minute, okay, where the hell is the evidence that I've abused my children? But yet we blindly go in because we're thinking, hey, you know, let's go ahead and let's get this behind us and get it resolved, not knowing that they're all in bed together and that they're trying to figure out how we can get those children removed from you because those children are commodities and they're precious because they make money for the state. You know, the other day I was on the phone and I called down to Governor Bevin's office in Kentucky. Now, in the state of Kentucky, as it is in every state across the nation, is that when you have children that are in foster care and that child becomes missing or goes AWOL, they have 12 hours by federal law, 12 hours to notify the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And yet right there in the state of Kentucky, Governor Evans comes out with a report saying that there was 114 children that was missing. 43 of them was from the Louisville area. There was only two of those children registered with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So then my question was, is that what happened with the money that children are generating? Does the state still get paid even though those children are nowhere around or to be located? You know, are they still collecting money? Because I believe that they are. And then why is it that we're paying out tax dollars if these children, the state's not following the protocol and they're not going ahead and following where these children are at? It's just crazy.
Right.
It is. If you've got missing children that have just vanished mysteriously that no one has accounted for, and you have these court-appointed officials who are in charge of those children who are getting a paycheck every week, every month, however often it is, for the so-called care and feeding of these children, and the and they're not reported, and that paycheck presumably still comes every month. That these people are still getting paid, but there's the other side of it. Did they get paid by someone who has now bought that child and is exploiting them? Did they get paid by someone who has taken that child into the sex trade? You know, these are questions that just remain unanswered, and the cost in humanity is incalculable. But the
absolutely. You know, Robin, one of the things that really, really struck a nerve with me was that, you know, here the state of Kentucky is, and I believe that the state of Kentucky is still collecting money just in the Louisville area, 43 children missing, two of them on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And I'm saying, why is it that the federal government can't come in, the U.S. Marshals or the FBI, Department of Justice, somebody, and say, you know what, we're severing your paycheck right now. You're no longer getting any money because we want to find those other 41 kids. But those 41 kids, they're mere commodities that nobody gives a damn about. And it's like, but yet there's 41, at least 41 other parents, probably 82 or 86 of them out there But they're all wondering, where's my child? You know, and nobody cares. And it's like something has to give. And I think that we're on the verge of either A, martial law is going to be implemented, B, there's going to be a whole hell of a lot of indictments coming down against the judiciary, because I think it's no secret that President Trump does not care too much for our judicial process after having been run through it himself. C, I think that, you know, it's the constant diligence of the people and the programs. When you ask about whether or not your programs are beneficial, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Because everybody's out there looking for hope. They're wanting to hear from people that have been through it, that have been through the pits of hell and still come out okay, you know. It's not what we had envisioned, but we're doing okay. But we're trying to make a betterment for all of society, and I think that's what Martin Luther King had done. So I do believe that it's going to it will become manifested as time continues to toll, because we're at critical mass. They can't deny the truth because it's right there and staring you in the face. They run one of the largest, most well-organized criminal racketeering organizations anywhere in the United States is our judicial process.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about something else real quick, too. Do you know of Gretchen Reichen Hammond? She's been doing some stories. She's a journalist. Well, she and she's on Facebook, too, and I just got this message. I just want everybody to listen in. Everybody's been worried about her because she's a journalist, and I just want to read to you what happened to her. And we're letting this be known nationally because her life is in danger. And let me tell you this real quick, Brian. So she writes in early December, I received a warning from a source. I trust that my life or liberty might be in danger given my investigation into the Oakland County Probate Court in Michigan. A meeting has apparently taken place there at which options we discussed as to what to do about me. I decided to take January out of Detroit and let things calm down to sublease my apartment in order to secure more funds to continue my investigation. To protect the people I love, I kept the knowledge of my whereabouts to as few people as possible. She was able to sublease her apartment to a student named Sasha. She moved in on January 21st. Last night at 7:42 p.m., Sasha emailed me to let me know the rent was on its way. According to my landlord, at 12:30 a.m., at least 20 CPD officers showed up at the apartment and found Sasha dead inside. I am presently waiting from a call back from the detective in charge. I have no definitive word of cause as yet. She's in a safe place and wants everybody to know that. And I'm telling you right now, I believe that Gretchen was the target. I don't know why.
Yes.
I feel that way.
Yeah.
But Brian, this is horrible. This is what has happened to our society now. You know, and
yeah.
The problem is
yeah,
that
you become the target. You become the hunted.
Right.
Right.
So I want to let our listeners know that Gretchen, she is safe for now, but the person that was subletting her apartment has been killed.
Has passed away.
Passed away.
And we do not know why that happened, how that happened, or what happened to her. But we do know that she was quietly living in the place where this journalist who is doing good work to expose the corruption normally lives and would be residing.
Right. So Gretchen is in touch with many organizations right now, letting her know where her whereabouts are. She's an
or
excellent.
Or she's not where they think she is.
Well, she's somewhere, but she's safe, okay? So. But the
yep.
Sasha that was in her sublet apartment, she has passed away. And, oh, my gosh, that is just awful, 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 awful news. But
and we just don't – it's difficult to believe such a thing is mere coincidence.
Right. It's hard to believe. So I just want everybody
to
know
that. It's hard to believe that we live in a society. Yeah, it's hard to believe that we live in a society where you get hunted for telling the truth, you know, because they just don't want the truth to be known. Because what's the best way to control the masses? You disseminate the information. You tell them, you know, what they want to, what you want them to know, you know. And, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theory or anything like that, but I'm saying when the damn evidence is right there in front of your face and you see where we're headed, and whether right, wrong, or indifferent with anybody else's opinion, I praise God every day of my life that President Trump's in office, and I hope and pray that he is the man that brings about some major changes. But who knows, the powers to be that, you know, will tried to everything within their power to remove him from that position, but I can assure you that Hillary Clinton would have put our country on a collision course, a much more expedited pace than where we're presently at. That I can assure you. And I'm saying that we should never have to live in a state of fear. You know, I go out of my house, I wear a bulletproof vest, you know, I take every single precaution that I possibly can, check my cars, everything like that. You know, I've lost 46 friends along the road of life to either suicide or murder, and, you know, there's suspicious deaths or homicides. And then you look at these things, and, you know, there was a little girl down in Georgia by the name of Shannon Baskins, and Shannon Baskins had won a case, and we were just positioning things just right to get her a tort from action, because you had a judge give her a child over to a former boyfriend, not a blood relative, not somebody that had anything. And this man was grooming this child from the time she was 11 years of age on, just for his own sexual gratification and his own perversions, you know. And you sit there and you're saying, how the hell does this happen in the United States of America? You know, well, I'll tell you how it happens. It happens by greed and the lack of transparency. There's no oversight, and the judges, you don't like it, Robin, you don't like it, Lulu, well, you're welcome to take it up on appeal, knowing that the very few people have the resources or the ability. You might have the case, but they're just not going to go forward because they don't have the money. You look at our criminal system. I sit on the Innocence Project, and I look at the statistics there, and I'm saying it's alarming. Of all the nonsense that the majority of these people are railroaded into taking a plea bargain, because I'm going to give you a couple of choices here, Robin. You can either go to jail for 20 years to life, or we can plead it down and we'll let you cop to a guilty plea, and we're only going to give you 3 years, and you might be out in a year and a half on good behavior. So Robin's sitting there and saying, listen, I'm not sure my family can go 20 years in my absence. And even though I didn't commit the crime, you know, there's a possibility I could be out in 18 months. I'm going to roll the dice and go along with it because I don't have the money to mount the defense. Those are the harsh realities of life.
Wow. Right, and it happens every day, a dozen times a day, in courtrooms all across our nation and throughout the world. This is not just an American problem. Face Us is an organization that hears from other countries as well. So the corruption is not something that's exclusive to us, but it does. It happens every day, dozens of times or hundreds of times or thousands of times. And it is an abuse of justice in each and every instance. And yet it goes on because the people in power control the power, have the power. Now, I want people to realize that the power that these judges exercise and control is your power and my power. In America, we are electing people and appointing people and allowing people to hold office. If we refuse to allow these things to happen en masse, if we join together and say no more of this, it would put an end to it. They count on the fact that you will remain ignorant and dazed and confused, and that you don't have the personal power to stop them, and they have organized themselves into these criminal cabals where they do have concentrated power, where they can bring 100 people to court if they need to, because they've got 100 attorneys in their pocket, and they've got, you know, 20 or 30 others that are appointed, that are court-appointed people who are perfectly willing to come to court and lie, perfectly willing to fabricate evidence, perfectly willing to tell whatever story it takes, because that's how they get their paycheck. That's how they're paid. That's what makes their life go round. That's what allows them to smoke the big fat cigars and drink the champagne. And they don't give a damn about the people that they hurt, because they themselves do very well. And until we, the people, join with the judicial accountability movement, join with Stand Up With Face Us, join together in en masse, that is, quit allowing ourselves to be divided into, mine is a hospice group. Oh, well, mine is a parental rights group. Oh, well, mine is a probate group. Oh, well, mine is, if we are continually in these groups that are separate from one another and battling like it's some kind of turf war amongst ourselves, then we're right where they want us, and they are holding us down by our own willingness to be distracted and allow ourselves to show a lack of focus and not to band together to stop it. So we really need to work together.
Right, and that's why we've also have we're going to help Zena also with Opt-in USA, whatever we can do as an organization as well. And I just want to let her know that, too. And we told her that the end of last year that we would be willing to do that. So I think us all coming together is
a long time.
Huh?
Yeah, it's taken a long time to try to finalize all the pieces. Zena's been at this thing for 30 years. I mean, I praise God every day of my life that, you know, she came into my life and that I had the good fortune to, you know, hook up with Zena on these fronts. And right now she's taking a much-needed a break for a minute, and even though she's taking a break, she's really just honing in to look at some things and cut off of the rest of the world to looking at what has to be done. But she'll be back up with us here on the first of the month, and you know, we're going to be hitting it back hard and heavy again. But you look at this stuff, and a lot of people don't realize what it takes to really dig in and really understand this, because the laws, they circumvent them, you know, and they write ambiguous language out there that takes and says, well, you know, we really think that you have an argument, but, you know, your time has expired, or some other happy horse shit where they've got a rule. And I'm sitting there saying, me personally, I really don't care about your rules. You know, their rules are your rules. They're not my rules. I care about the law. I care about, are we upholding the law? And that, I think, has to come back to us. I think we need to get back to that. I think that all of our courts ought to be open. They ought to be transparent. I think that I find it a bit repugnant that, you know, we can take and we can say that a limo on the Mars is, you know, it's protected, and yet we have children that are in New York the other day, a fetus, right up until the time that it's ready to come through the birth canal, it can be cut up and completely torn apart and sold off as body parts and things like that, because it's just tissue. It's not a human, you know. It's like, how the hell did we get such ignorance? It just boggles my mind. So, you know,
right.
We've got to come together. Everybody does. You know, we've got to get to be on the moral. But the Bible's clear. The Bible tells us is that the Lord will heal our land when we have a nation that cries out. And I think that more and more people are crying out because we're saying, where's our relief? You know, there's none forthcoming. We've been here. We've been there. We've been to our senators. We've been to our congressmen. We've been to the highest courts in the land, and they just constantly ignore us and thumb their nose at us. And it's only by God's mercy and grace that I've gotten to where I've been, and, you know, and I still haven't arrived. I mean, I'm still struggling, still challenged, still fighting, but every day we get up and we go at it again, because I keep telling my children, you know, my children from time to time, they want me to quit, and I say, you know, you do realize that when I quit, I'm handing you the same shit sandwich that was handed to me, okay? And if you want to eat off that shit sandwich, you're welcome to, but I don't think that it's productive or healthy for you. I think it's wiser that you know the truth, is that we've got a real systemic problem in the United States of America.
Right. So do you see change? I mean, I try to be optimistic about everything, and that's why I want to ask you. You run a really big organization. You're working with Zena Crenshaw. What do you feel is going to happen?
I feel absolutely it's changing. I feel absolutely it is, you know. But change isn't going to come, you know, without a fight. I mean, they're going to fight us every step of the way, you know. They're not going to stand up and say, well, geez, golly, gee, jeepers, you know, we made a mistake. You go back and you look at what happened in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, there with the priest scandal. And then it took a U.S. attorney's office to go in and prosecute, and they were saying that it took 4 years to do the investigation just to go forth with the prosecution to discover that, guess what, it wasn't just the priest that was molesting these children. It was every other person that remained silent. It was the ones that was there when the police department knowingly knew what was happening, and they didn't come forth with the evidence, or they collaborated with the priest to be able to go into a court and say, well, you know, hey, Judge Oha, he had some real problems and stuff. He was a troubled youth, and, you know, maybe what he's saying is just a bit of an exaggeration, without taking the opportunity to really sit down and look at it, because I don't believe for a minute that you had all those children, 1,100 children there, that was lying, you know? And it's like you have all this evidence, and then it went further to saying even the prosecuting attorney's office, the judges themselves, all of them knew what was going on to our youth, and yet they all turned a blind eye to it because it was easier to go along with the lie than it was to stand for the truth. And I tell my children, you know, you have to stand in the face of adversity, even if it costs us our life, because truth will is the only thing that will set you free. And that was one of the things when I was with Senator Grassley last year on C-SPAN was that his famous comment is, the truth will set you free. Well, here in the United States, there's a truth. The truth is that every time you go up a ladder to the next court, to the Court of Appeals, to the Supreme Court, to the federal court, and you keep going on up and on up, or you go to your local ombudsman and you go to your local councilman and you go to your local representative and then your state and then your federal representatives, every time that you go up, you discover another truth, that those sons of biscuits are just as corrupt as the other ones because they don't want nothing to change. And I'm saying change is inevitable. It has to happen. How it's going to happen, Lulu, I honestly don't know. But I do know that the pressure is on, that there has to be a change. And I think the first thing is to acknowledge that we do have this problem from the higher-ups in our government. They have to acknowledge it. But you look at what's happened with our Department of Justice, the FBI, it's a big damn cesspool. It's just a cesspool where we condone lying now on a regular basis and say, well, you know, they might have misspoke, they might have fabricated something, they might have, you know, told a little white lie. Well, you know, that little white lie is called perjury. And when we go back and prosecute people for lying, then we may very well have the opportunity to rein in some of this nonsense.
Wow. So that's awesome. And you said it so perfectly. You know, the whole show is, I've just been intrigued by the way you talk. You're so correct on every single level, you know. And so I want anybody who wants to come on and talk real quick to Brian or have a question or a comment, the number that you could reach us is 845-241-9962. You press a 1. 845-241-9962. Press a 1, and I'll get you into the studio if you have a question or a comment. But you are exactly right on, isn't it?
You make your arguments eloquently, and you speak with conviction, and you hold the line of the truth very well, and that of course is what we strive to do here, because it is so necessary that people hear the truth. And it is what gives integrity to our show. It is why you're here, because we feel the integrity that you speak with, and it gives integrity to the listener for them to realize that they're not hallucinating, that they're not alone, they're not mistaken. It's not some trick I've done something wrong that I don't quite understand that makes this court rob me. No, it really is a criminal enterprise that's being exercised upon you and against you, and you need to be aware that that's what it is, and you need to recognize it for what it is, and you need to call it what it is and act as though that's what it is in order to oppose it. And it takes hearing the truth and knowing the truth. So I admire and acknowledge your integrity.
Right, and I'm getting messages on my phone right now saying, keep Brian talking and educating the world. He is fantastic. Explain the whole system in 5 minutes. Keep the air to the phone. Awesome job.
No, I appreciate that.
Yes, he is.
You know, there's a real argument there, you know, Lulu and Robin, whereas, you know, in 2012, I impaneled a team of attorneys from across the nation to come in and educate me, because I was saying, you need to take me from kindergarten and you need to get me into postgraduate college, you know, a college degree here, and you guys got 4 weeks in which to do it because I'm going to sue this judge. And, you know, they were saying, you know, if we go in and we sue the judge, the first thing that's going to happen is that we're going to lose our law license. And that's a reality of life. The court has so much power that any attorney that would speak up, because they're not all corrupt, not all the attorneys are corrupt, it's all that right. They're allowed to become corrupt, you know, but to throw them all into one cesspool, I'll never do that. I'm not going to say that every judge, every lawyer. I'm saying, though, that they possibility, the probability is higher, likely, because of the way that they have it set up and staged. But when we had gotten all of the attorneys together,
we've had a lot of attorneys come on our show, and these are the attorneys that are fighting to help us get the system back the way it should.
And just the way, you said, hey, Robin, you know, you'll be given a choice, 20 years if we find you guilty, which we don't really need real evidence because we've fabricated enough evidence to do that. Or you can take a plea bargain, say, I'm guilty, we'll give you, of this lesser charge, we'll give you 3 years, in 18 months you'll be out. That they put that kind of pressure on the people that are coming to court. Well, the attorneys are facing a similar kind of pressure that says, you bring this lawsuit and it'll be the last lawsuit you ever pursue because you're going to lose your legal license and you will no longer be an attorney. So we will take away your means, your livelihood, your means of providing for your family, right, putting your children through college. We'll take all that away from you because you're doing the right thing for your client. So oftentimes, even when an attorney sets out, you know, with a good heart and a kind outlook and the intention to serve their clients, they are knocked down by this corruption in the legal system. So I acknowledge and recognize that there are attorneys that are out there trying to do the right thing and wanting to do the right thing and hoping to do the right thing and doing the right thing, but it often comes with a very high price. Here we are. One of the things that we're doing is supporting those attorneys as well. Everyone who's fighting for real justice in our courts is on our team, and people that we're standing with and behind,
right,
that we will help as best we can.
Right. And we have a caller in. It's a 619 number. We're going to bring you live into the studio. 619, you have a question or a comment? Hold on, let me bring this up. 619, you're on the air.
Yes, I had a comment. I just wanted to say it seems to me the courts back the abusers in the court cases in the family court because they bring in the cases and the money keeps on flowing in. And then the victims are held hostage by both the family court system and the abuser or the, you know, the victimizer who is being facilitated by the court system because they represent a continuous stream of money. And it also seems a large proportion of them are sociopaths or psychopathic, and they're very manipulative. They don't show their emotion very they have a very shallow affect, so they don't show their emotion. And so the courts take them very seriously, and they appear to an uninitiated person who doesn't know what they are as a very respectable, honest person when they're really pathological liars and they're manipulative. And then the court makes money off of these cases because they keep bringing the motion forward. They keep filing motion after motion and holding the person who's at the other end of the motion hostage. And they can do this for years and years of a person's life. And it just takes over their life. And it's just absolutely unbelievable. The court doesn't make much of an attempt to stop this because they're making money off of ordering all the programs. The attorneys are making exorbitant sums of money. The hourly pay for attorneys in the family law is pretty much the highest pay for any attorney that there are. So they make tons of money off of this. The court system's making money, the judges, the mediators, the custody evaluators, the psychological therapists. All of these people are making tons of money off of these cases being recycled back and forth, you know, continuously for many years. There's no limit. There's no time limit that's being put on these people. So, you know, it just takes over a person's life. They end up bankrupt. All their money, their savings, their pension money, everything is just stolen. So it's a form of looting.
Right.
You're right.
Yeah, and I covered a lot of territory there, but it is a form of looting, and it's just most people have no idea this is going on. And the general public who hasn't been in the courtroom, hasn't watched what these cases are, what's happening in the courtroom, what the judges are doing, it's just very abusive. It's absolutely legal abuse. It's legal bullying. It's harassment. It's just everything. There's just so many different elements that can be covered. But I wanted to also point out that if the judges were truly held accountable for the outcomes of their decisions, so the results of their court orders, and they were held responsible when a child was killed by an abuser or perpetrator that they gave custody to, if they were truly held accountable for that, you would see much different orders coming out. And also, if there were in the courtroom, if there were cameras that were being continuously live streamed to the public, those courtrooms are supposed to be public. They're supposed to be accessible to the public. So what's the point? Why would they not want these court cases to be live streamed to the general public? They shouldn't be hiding behind closed doors and keeping people out of the courtroom that are from the general public. So I think that's part of the problem.
Right. Well, I think that you're absolutely right in part of that, okay, but part of that equation. One is that, yeah, the courts are supposed to be open and be transparent, but the question beckons is that how are you going to obtain that? We have to continually press in order for us to obtain that information. You know, there was, and then you talked about a party that would constantly go back into court. Well, sometimes what we have discovered is that sometimes people really don't have a choice. I mean, you know, we can say that we do have a choice, but do you really? Now, let's propose hypothetically that your ex-husband decides, hey, I'm going to take your children from you, and I'm going to tell them that you had molested your child. You knowingly know that you didn't. And then, but yeah, the father goes in and says, well, I think that it's best that there be no contact between children and you, because you possess the risk to them, and then you are the one that's labeled as the vexatious litigant because you're going back in, and vexatious is only if the case doesn't have any merit. But it's the court's job. It's a mandated duty, an obligation, and a responsibility for a court to conduct a veracity hearing on each and any allegation that's ever levied. They cannot just arbitrarily make an election of choice to walk in there and say, well, Robin, you're guilty because, hey, I think that you're guilty. There has to be something more than that. And that's why they don't want the cameras, because then it calls into question the authenticity and the authority for what they have and whether or not they violate that. And the court's reluctant to do that. They like the money-making scheme in which they operate.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think there's way too many decisions being made not on any evidence, or not on hard evidence, but on a fabricated allegation. And it's not, it's just the judge's discretion to make a decision. Oh, I like this party, or I agree with this. But I think oftentimes it's because they have a political agenda that they're making the decisions. It's not as much their personal bias, as it's not so much that, as it is there's a command coming down from above. You will do this, you will do that. I think there's a judge's school, and they go to that judge's school, and they're indoctrinated into this is the agenda, this is what we want to accomplish here, here's how we do it, and that's an indoctrination into that whole procedure that they wanted them to follow. So I think that plays a part, too.
Well, if I could address that a little bit, the agenda is going to always be to serve the court. In quotes, a court is a corporate entity. The judge is a corporate officer, and the idea is to maximize the profits of the corporation. So the judge looks at how much money comes in and says, how can we maximize the profits of the corporation? And looks at the litigants and says, what is it that each of these litigants is trying to accomplish, and how can each of these best be exploited so that the court takes the money away from the litigants and brings it into the court and divides it up among the members of the court. This corporation is designed to pay that judge and the officers of the court, that are all the lawyers that come in, that are all the people that are assigned by the court or appointed by the court. The court is looking out for those people, and it is that kind of a corporate entity. It is not about justice. It never was about justice. It's about maximizing profits. And that's why you see these courts that where there is no justice, where justice is not even an afterthought, where truth doesn't matter at all, because it's not profitable to tell the truth, and it's not profitable to bring justice into a system that is designed to rob people of all of their wealth.
Right. And a lot of people are blind. They're so blindsided. I mean, I've got emails going every direction. You know, I've got them on Messenger. I've got them on, you name it, Brian. I've got them coming in every direction. And absolutely everyone agrees with you, agrees with us, all of us. You know, so this is good. So we have to educate others. We have to educate them to start boycotting these attorneys. Stop going there. You know, you have a divorce, like I said, handle it yourself. You have to do anything, handle it yourself. And just try not to rat on other families. And I'll talk to Candace Schwager. She's another really good attorney. She also said that we needed to get some churches involved to keep an eye on our elderly people, our children and all that. What do you think about that, you know, to start going to bigger places like that and letting them know what's going on, you know, what's going on with the children and our folks that are being ripped from us? I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, there's a big movement right now. There's a big there's a big movement going on right now, and I don't know if you know who Doc Washburn is down in Arkansas. But Doc Washburn has gotten 25 different churches to come together. I think it's 25. It might be 27 or 23. I don't remember the exact number. But that's exactly what they're talking about, is that the church needs to become more involved. You know, we need to be our brother's keeper, because we've always looked to the government to be, you know, the ones to take care of all of our social ills, and it was never by design. It should have never been that way, you know. But when we take and we look at it, and we're saying they can take and give this money to a party that is no relation to the family or anything, but yet they wouldn't dare sit and say, well, it's going to cost us $3,000 a month to take care of this child that's in foster care. But you know what? If we help grandma by giving her $400 a month, you know, for her to pay for groceries, she would probably enjoy the opportunity and the privilege of being able to have a grandson or granddaughter there, you know. It's just the whole system by design is designed for the state to take more control, because the more control that they have, the more prisons that we can build, the more prisons that we can build, the more money that we can build out of the tax-paying citizens. And I think we're at a critical mass, because we look and we say, you know, we have the largest incarceration rate anywhere in the world is right here in the United States of America. How the hell did that happen? You know how it happened? Because we kept and we sat on our hands and we've allowed this proliferation of abuse to manifest, and saying, well, you know, it was happened to the Indians back when they took in the Trail of Tears, excellent, excellent book. You know, and then you take and you look at what happened with the African Americans. They would just go in and they just, we're going to take and put you on a program or lower impoverished people, whether you are Latino, whether you are Anglo-American, it didn't matter. So, and then if you're in order for you to get public housing, you know, if you have a male, you don't qualify. So, you know, we're going to set the father out, or, you know, the head of the household, we're going to set them aside. Because why? We're going to have a future generation coming up that's going to help fill those. Don't believe it? Let's look at the Kids for Cash scandal and see exactly what happened there. It's the same thing. They want to privatize everything so that a good old boy network can continually create more money so that they can feed it back to those select group that believe that they are sitting in the positions to be gods over top of the American people. And that's not the way that the Constitution was ever set up or designed.
Yeah. God,
well said.
That's well said, I tell you. It's a scary world we live in nowadays, you know. And I always tell everybody, just get up, speak up. Don't just hit the like button on Facebook. Get up, talk to your representatives, talk to your senators, talk to whoever you got to, but never stop talking about what's going on. I try to tell everybody to boycott getting trust funds being done by attorneys. Don't even go to attorneys if you can avoid that. If you have one that you trust and that's been in your family friend for a long time, even then, you have to be careful who you go to nowadays. And I say go into any kind of courtroom nowadays, you're putting your whole family in jeopardy.
Partly because, even as we said, even those good attorneys are going to have a very difficult time when they're in corrupt courtrooms trying to represent you in any way that is meaningful or helpful to you, because they recognize and know that that is the real value of that attorney to that corporate entity of the court is how much money they bring in. And if they don't rob you along with their brethren and sistren that are working in the court system, then they will be exorcised from that. They'll be treated like you don't belong here, because here you are trying to help your client keep their money to themselves and to their family instead of robbing them and bringing it into the court, putting them in a position where we can rob them. If you're not willing to do that, then you don't deserve to be an attorney, and we'll take away that license. You'll no longer be an attorney. You have to find some other means of livelihood. And we're going to sue your ass. We're going to take everything from your family. We're going to destroy you and ruin your reputation, ruin your name. We'll do everything in our power to make you into nothing if you come up against us. So this is what people are facing in the courtrooms in America today. Not only are there are good attorneys who want to do the right thing, but they're not permitted to in many of these courtrooms.
Right.
They're under the thumb of the mob that is ruling the courts, even like the people who are in front of those judges are under the thumb of the mob that is ruling the courts.
Right.
It is a criminal enterprise. And to see it in the light of land of the free, home of the brave, that's just brainwashing. That's just, excuse me, but bullshit. There's no truth to it.
Yeah.
It's not real. That's the illusion that they paste over it to gild the lily, to make it look like there's something good where there is no good. It is a criminal enterprise, and that is what it has become, and we, the American people, have to rise up and change it, or that is what it will remain, and it's only going to get worse before it gets better. We've got to join together
right.
to battle it, or it's not going to get better.
Right, and the thing I also noticed is that, I totally went blank. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, my God. You know, I was going to say that nowadays, even if you get a judge that has been found wrongdoing, they will retire instead.
Oh, they're
That's
not going to be removed
do.
Forcibly.
They're not going to be removed. They retire and they get their pensions. They go away. That is, they need to bring these judges into the courtroom.
Yeah, they need to. Those judges need to be made to stand before a judge and pay for their crimes, right?
Yeah, they need to stand. What do you think of that, Brian?
Well,
sure,
get
that
promoted.
What?
Or they get promoted. You know, we had a magistrate that sat on our case
right.
in Champaign County, Ohio, by the name of Magistrate Katrina Lancaster. And when she was running for judge in the neighboring county, there of Clark County, I had went to all of her meetings and stuff, and I was saying, you know, you folks are aware that this woman had lied on an official court document. And where I caught her in the lie was that I was ordered into court on August 28, 2010. And when we went into the court, I had taken three attorneys with me, and they said, what are we going to do? And I said, you boys are going to sit here on the stoop for a minute. And I said, we're going to go ahead and have a little talk with the judge, and she's going to pay you because I'm tired of paying you. And they said, it'll never happen. And I said, well, if it doesn't, it's my ass that's going to jail, and I'm willing to pay the price, but I'm almost willing to bet that she's going to appoint you boys to represent me, at least one of you. And they said, well, you know, and we'll make sure that we get a hold of your uncle and get money put on the books down at the commissary because your ass will be sitting in jail. And I said, well, it may very well be, but, you know, we're going to take her to task because I think that she has to pay for my legal representation. And we went into court, and they stayed out on the stoop. We get to the court proceedings. Magistrate Katrina Lancaster said, Mr. Kincher, I see that you're in court today and that you do not have legal counsel. Do you wish to proceed? I said, no, Your Honor, I do not. I want to appoint me counsel. She said, request denied. I said, Your Honor, I adamantly object. And Garfield Heist versus Stefanik, the United States Supreme Court said, when one's looking at deprivations of their rights, i.e. incarceration, you must appoint me counsel. You don't have a choice. She said, Mr. Kinter, you will sit down and you will be quiet or I will hold you in contempt. You've been to speak with a number of attorneys, one of them being that of my ex-husband, and I can assure you I don't appreciate people meddling in my personal affairs. I said, Your Honor, this has absolutely nothing to do with your personal affairs. This has to do with trying to find competent legal counsel, which seems to be in short supply here in the state of Ohio, to expose the blatant bias, arrogance, ignorance, and discrimination of this court. Doesn't alter or change what the law requires. You must appoint me counsel. She said, denied. 3 days later, well, while I'm there, one of the things that I should make clear is that I've done a lot of things that a lot of other people haven't done, is that I invested in some pretty heavy technology. So I had the entire transcript already recorded, but I went down, I got a copy of the disc for that day's proceeding, which was allowed. Now Ohio law has changed that. You can no longer get the disc. So because they want to try to conceal more of the evidence. But what I did then was I got the copy of the transcript. I had it transcribed where it clearly illuminated it. 3 days later, the judge comes out with an order, says Mr. Kinter was in the court this day and that he voluntarily waived his right to counsel. And I was sitting and saying, how does somebody draw the conclusion that you waived your rights when you had requested the appointment of counsel on two occasions? And the court, appeals court confirmed with my analysis, but they never took any action against the magistrate. So she moved over to another county. Well, then what happens is I go in to the county commissioner's office and the council meetings, and I'm saying, how the hell do you guys even allow this to happen, knowing that this woman deliberately, intentionally, willfully falsified a court document? And they said, oh, no, you don't understand, Mr. Kinter. She already explained that, okay? She told us that, you know, this was just somebody that was a pissed off litigant. And I said, oh, well, let me tell you a story, okay? It's more than a pissed off litigant on that individual. Well, then all of a sudden things changed, you know, and they had tried to do some backpedaling things, but it was too late. They'd already went out, did all their endorsements, got everything, but they didn't want to take the time to get educated. And that's what I was telling them, is that right here, facts and evidence don't lie. People do. Sometimes those people have a title behind their name, such as a magistrate, or such as a judge, such as a Supreme Court judge, a sitting judge, you know, and they do it all in a consorted effort because they know that the possibility or probability of you appealing a decision is highly unlikely given the cost restraints for it. Because any time that I would go to the appeals court and I filed a number of appeals on each and every single item that I didn't think was right, so that's why I wanted to go back with the lady when she was talking about the people that pushed the litigation. There's sometimes people just have it ingrained and indoctrinated to them that truth's still truth, no matter the cost. You must go forward. And you look at that and you're saying the totality of it was is that nobody would take the time to educate themselves as to who exactly this woman was.
Wow.
It's a sorry state of affairs.
It is a sorry state of affairs.
Sorry state of affairs. Oh, my God. I've got everybody saying, right on. I got everybody talking about you right now. So, you know, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left of the show. Let's wrap this up, and what do you want to see happen? I mean, what plans do you have? Talk about that, will you?
Well, what I want to see happen is, and I believe that our country is the greatest country of all countries. I truly, honestly believe that. But I believe that, you know, we don't need more laws on the books. We need the enforcement of laws. And I believe that we need to have an independent oversight committee of the judiciary made up of, you know, hairstylists, barbers, mechanics, laborers, you know, just common, ordinary folks, and that you would have a 15-member board there, and if two-thirds of those people, 10 people, agreed that this judge had violated your rights, that you would have the right to be able to submit that information to the other 12 boards across the United States, and then out of those boards, if there is an overwhelming two-thirds majority of those people in agreement, another 8 boards come on board and say, yes, they have violated your rights. You've got a direct line to a U.S. attorney's office. We have to have a FEMA. That's what we have to have. We've got a real crisis. It's no different than, you know, Hurricane Katrina. When you have a catastrophic event hit the nation, that's what we've got right now. We've got a catastrophic event going on, and that is the usurpation of power by a select group within inside the judiciary, and we have to rein it in. So I honestly, truly believe that if we can obtain that objective and we begin the prosecution of these judges and hold them liable when they make these errors and these blunders and they see it, I think then and only then will it become self-correcting.
Wow. And tell everybody how they can get a hold of you on your Facebook and tell them about the Judicial Accountability Movement. And how to contact you.
You can get a hold of
us.
Well, we're on Facebook on JAM, the Judicial Accountability Movement. You can join us at www.jointhejam.org. You know, my direct email is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, the number 4, Justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E, at yahoo.com. My direct telephone number is 937-926-5497. And I have a number of people tell me all the time, Brian, you shouldn't put that out there. And I say, nope, the truth will set you free. And I want everybody and anybody to know that if you come and you're going to try to violate my rights or my children's rights, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to defy it. I'm going to take you to task and I'm going to stand on my principles and my convictions, no matter the cost. So, you know, that's where we're at. You know, it's been a long, grueling battle, but we are seeing glimmers of hope, you know. As I said, the Humpty case was one. You know, they just had another case down in Texas there, 1,100 cases that had to be, you know, thrown out and, you know, saying that they didn't have the jurisdiction. You look at what happened down there in Philadelphia, and they're beginning to slowly, slowly come about. But, you know, I think we have an opportunity in front of us to really apply pressure, and that's why I greatly appreciate what Janet Crenshaw has done and digging in, because, you know, this applies to the political arena as well, because it doesn't suit well for the President of the United States to have to acknowledge that here we are supposed to be the greatest nation of all nations, and yet 88 of the best world's legal scholars unanimously agree that the United States is violating its own citizens' rights, you know. So It's a huge club to carry.
Right, and if anybody wants to go to Opt-In USA, it's on Facebook, right?
Yes, ma'am. Opt-In USA.
Okay, 845 number.
I'm Kurt.
Okay, 845 number. Hold on a minute, Brian. There's an 845 number that has her hands up. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, you know what? You just stole my comment. I was going to ask. My name is Elizabeth. Hi, Brian. You did.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hi, Luann and Robin and everybody. You did a fantastic job explaining a lot of, you know, what's going on and the progress we're making. And I'm especially interested in what's going on with the Opt-In USA campaign, which is spearheaded by, or primarily overseen by, Dr. Zena Crenshaw. I did want to just add one thing. In addition to asking the listening audience to please go to Opt-In USA and like it, because we need a showing of hands, so to speak, that, you know, this really is a very serious problem affecting millions. It's a human rights crisis that is permeating the legal system. But more importantly, what I wanted to say was that as a result of what has been happening and this accomplishment, getting the attention of the Human Rights Committee at the UN, they are going to now get in touch with the State Department as a result and ask for answers just to bring it to their attention. And Brian alluded to this earlier. Nobody's going to come in here and say, hey, you need to do this and you need to do that, but they're going to bring it to their attention. And what's really terrific about this is that our government is going to have to respond. Or let me rephrase that. They don't have to respond, but more than likely they will, because it would really be, you know, it wouldn't look well or bode well with the rest of the, you know, our international neighbors if the United States doesn't want to address what we're claiming is a human rights crisis. So I just wanted to put that out there, that this is a major, major accomplishment and step toward hopefully getting a response from our own country, because we need them. We don't want anybody else to be helping us from out there. We want to address our own problems, but they're not being addressed. Although I understand that, you know, individual people are making progress with their senators or the United States Justice Department and maybe even some local FBI agencies, you know, in different states and different communities, but that does not help the rest of us, the rest of the community, the thousands, hundreds and thousands of us who are affected by, you know, the persistent legal system abuse. So that's basically what I wanted to just add, to please like the Opt-in USA page and to be hopeful and be on the lookout for, you know, the progress. I'm so looking forward to you having Dr. Crenshaw on, and I believe Chief Gordon, Brian, do you know what's happening with this?
Yes.
Chief Gordon going to be on his? Yes, okay, great. I can't wait.
Yeah,
I cannot wait.
We're going to have with us on the show as well,
know,
and I've been coordinating with Tina when that's going to happen, but I know she's out of town for a little bit or she's taking some break, which is wonderful. You have to clear your head every now and then. But we'll let everybody know when we're going to have Dr. Zena on with Opt-in USA, with Gordon, and we'll probably also have Brian come and join us too, because I tell you what, that would be a really good show, and we need to inform everybody what's going on. But I wanted to let everybody know, next weekend I have she's a country music award. Her name is Kelly Derrickson, and she's a native 2-time winner of the music awards. She's going to be coming on talking about the native culture and what their fights for as warriors. And we also have downloaded some of their music onto our radio show. But her name is Kelly Derrickson, and we met her at an Indian show last week, and she's agreed to come onto the show to talk about the same things happening to the native culture as it is to anybody in probate and the CPS courts and all the courts, the same things happening to them, being attacked and all that stuff. So that's going to be really interesting next week. It's going to be great. And I have some other people that called me today that want to come and tell their stories on our radio show, which we encourage everybody to get up, speak out. Giving up is not an option. You know,
justice requires transparency and accountability, and we have to institute that, because it's certainly not happening in our courts.
Right, and Brian, it's always an honor to have you on our show. I mean, I never stop talking about you and the judicial accountability movement, and everybody, Opt-in USA is where we need to be with Brian and everybody on there. Brian, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
What you're doing is
thank
amazing.
Thank you, guys.
And all of you, and you as a caller calling in, appreciate everybody that calls in. Yes. Everybody that calls in, great job. I mean, let's keep this going. So next week, Kelly Derrickson, I'm hoping to have on. And then I have, hopefully, we can get Opt-in USA, Zena, to come on. So we're working on that now. And hopefully we're going to have Gretchen coming on to our show to talk about the journalist that she's become. And please stay safe if you're out there listening to the show. Please stay safe. Everybody, stay safe. Avoid the courtrooms. Brian, thank you for coming on. Okay? So,
thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure. We appreciate you.
Keep in touch with us, too, Brian. Let us know if anything happens. Come on to the show. Anytime, you're welcome. Let everybody know what's going on. Everybody wants to thank you. They just enjoyed listening to the show tonight. Okay? So,
thank you.
We're going to wrap this up, and we're going to play our You Don't Know You're a Judge song one more time, because we want to let everybody know you don't know you're a judge, okay? So here we go. Thank you, everybody. Good night.